Hi, true crime fans. I'm Erin.
And I'm Shay. We host All Crime, No Cattle, a conversational podcast which focuses on true crime stories from the Lone Star State.
We strive to bring you a balanced and well-researched story about Texas cases big and small.
We do the research so you don't have to.
We also end every episode with a good news story, just to remind everyone that real life isn't quite as depressing as true crime can make it out to be.
New episodes drop every Thursday, and you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. All Crime, No Cattle, because crime is bigger in Texas, y'all.
Something happened in the home. Someone possibly was killed there, at least one person, and then they disappeared.
Texas is known for being tough on crime and those who commit it, or at least the ones who get caught.
There are monsters among us.
60% of violent crimes in Texas go unsolved, and a majority of victims rarely make the headlines. Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, gives in-depth accounts of unsolved homicides and missing persons cases throughout the Lone Star State in an attempt to provide a voice for victims and their families.
She was a loving person. That's why after 13 years, it's really bothering me still that nothing's been done, nobody's been found.
Please join Gone Cold Podcast on your favorite podcatcher as we examine these forgotten and often underreported crimes.
You really have to pray and hope for those people that really know something.
Southern Fried True Crime covers cases that are not suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Listener discretion is advised. They say that into each life, some rain must fall. 37-year-old Crystal Serrate McDowell had seen her share of rain. She lost her parents at the age of 11 and was raised by her uncle. She had recently divorced her husband of 10 years, Stephen McDowell. Their divorce was final in June of 2017. On August 25, 2017, Hurricane Harvey was bearing down and about to make landfall in the greater Houston area. Crystal lived in a suburb of Houston called Baytown, and in the hours before the torrential rain began, the beautiful mother of two went missing. The uncle who raised her was the first to sound the alarm. He was extremely worried and said Crystal was the most responsible person he knew. When she didn't show up for work that morning, he was immediately concerned. For the local sheriff's office, his concern was suspect. And though law enforcement worked through the hurricane to find Crystal, their focus wasn't exactly on the right person. At least not right away. Welcome to Episode 30, Down Came the Rain, The Disappearance of Crystal Serrate McDowell. Baytown, Texas is a small city located within the Houston metropolitan area in the Gulf Coast region of Texas. Settlement of the area began in 1882, and Baytown was originally three separate towns. One of those original towns was Goose Creek, which was named for the bayou where historians say Canadian geese wintered. The other two towns were Pelly and East Baytown. Baytown today lies about 26 miles east of Houston proper. When the Goose Creek oil field was discovered in 1903, the small towns all became sudden boom towns. The Humble Oil and Refinery Company was founded by one-time Texas Governor Ross Sterling. The company later became Baytown Refinery and is one of the largest Exxon refineries in the world. Exxon is still the leading employer in Baytown, with 10 plants in the area. Talks of merging these towns began after World War I, but they were not officially consolidated until 1948. With the discovery of oil came many immigrants. And Baytown is still proudly diverse, with a 40% Hispanic population and 15% African American. Baytown lies on the northern side of the Galveston Bay, near the San Jacinto River and Buffalo Bayou. It's really what we would call a large town, with around 85,000 residents. It's about 36 square miles, or 95 kilometers, and about 3% of that is covered in water. Baytown and other nearby cities are built on reclaimed marshlands and swamps. Baytown is bordered by water on three sides. Along the south and west is Galveston Bay, and on the east is Cedar Bayou. The geography of the town makes the weather a bit more pleasant than surrounding cities, with the winds from the bay lessening the crush of humidity, and temperatures are also more moderate than most inland cities. But the flatness of the area, along with the proximity to the bay, makes Baytown susceptible to major flooding, which of course makes Baytown especially vulnerable to hurricanes. 2017's Hurricane Harvey is tied with Katrina for being the costliest tropical cyclone in history, causing $125 billion in damages. It was the first major hurricane to make landfall in the U.S. since Wilma in 2005. Harvey was a Category 4 hurricane and had a diameter of 280 miles or 450 kilometers, with winds of 130 miles per hour when it first hit landfall. It hit Texas at around 11 o'clock on Friday night, August 25th. The Category 4 storm became a Category 1 by late Saturday morning, with winds slowing to 75 miles per hour, before Harvey stalled around noon the following day. By Sunday, it was downgraded to a tropical storm, but days later, huge swaths of the Houston area were uninhabitable, including major subdivisions in Baytown like Linwood, where many residents were rescued by boat. Harvey wound up dumping upwards of 51 inches of rain in the Houston and Galveston area. That is 27 trillion gallons. That number is hard to even picture. But if you look on YouTube, you will see how bad it was. Governor Greg Abbott declared a state of emergency and activated the Texas National Guard. Also, a battalion of citizen boat owners from Louisiana, known as the Cajun Navy, came in to help the beleaguered Gulf Coast of Texas. At this time, I'm going to pause for a word from one of our sponsors. For today's episode, I partnered with the Weather Channel. They are producing a new true crime series called Storm of Suspicion. This new series has everything you love about your favorite true crime shows and documentaries with an added twist. How the weather can play a huge role in an investigation, whether it's covering up a crime or uncovering who committed it. Storm of Suspicion premieres on Sunday, October 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on the Weather Channel with limited commercial interruptions. The series features Dr. Elizabeth Austin, a world-renowned forensic meteorologist who breaks down how weather can play an incredible role in criminal investigations. This show is going to be unlike anything you've ever seen on the Weather Channel, and true crime lovers, you won't want to miss this. Crystal McDowell's case is covered in the first episode, this Sunday, October 7th. Tune in to watch Crystal's story and see for yourself the players in this crime, the devastating effects of Hurricane Harvey, and a unique perspective on your favorite genre. Crystal Ann Serrate McDowell was born on October 26, 1979. She was a gorgeous blonde, with beautiful blue eyes and a 1,000-watt smile. A native of Baytown, she still resided there at the time of her disappearance, raising her two children and seemingly co-parenting amicably with her ex-husband. Though she lost her parents at a young age, Crystal was a very positive woman, energetic and adventurous. She was a flight attendant for 15 years with ExpressJet and traveled the world. It wasn't until after her children were born that she retired from the airline and joined the family business her Uncle Jeff ran, which was the real estate agency Virginia Malone & Associates. Crystal was now a third-generation real estate agent and was almost instantly successful. Her luminous personality and quick business mind were a natural fit in the competitive housing market. Her uncle, Jeff Walters, is the man who raised her after her parents passed away. They had an extremely close relationship, as you can imagine. He was more than an uncle. He was a father to Crystal. Crystal had married Stephen Wayne McDowell in April of 2007, and according to her best friend, Bronze Beckley, the couple was separated by that December. It was a tumultuous relationship from the very beginning. Though Steve lists his hometown as Baytown on Facebook, records show he attended schools in Oklahoma. Regardless, the rocky relationship with Crystal began early in their marriage. Steve worked as a shipping manager, but Crystal was always the main breadwinner. He had difficulty holding down jobs while she tended to excel in the workforce. They had their first child, a son named Madden, 2 years into the marriage. 3 years later, their daughter Maui was born. Crystal's children were her life. By January of 2016, she left her job as a flight attendant, which she had loved and been at for 15 years, to take the job at her family's real estate firm. She wanted to be home more for her children. And I bet she was ready to take a step away from Steve. Custodial arrangements would be difficult for a flight attendant, but not for a local real estate agent. In February of 2017, Crystal filed for divorce. Then on March 20th, she called 911 and reported that Steve had made threats to her, himself, and their children. Lieutenant Steve Doris said that Crystal was concerned because she had received a call from one of the kids' schools saying that Steve had never dropped off the child that morning. The lieutenant said they tried to reach the husband, but couldn't contact him. This quote is offhand, as if, yeah, we called, but we couldn't find him. Oh well. I understand that the divorce wasn't final, and therefore no custody arrangement was in place. But if Crystal complained that he threatened his life, hers, and their children's, why wouldn't the police try to find him? Isn't that their job? Steve wound up returning the kids a few days later, and ultimately, Crystal didn't file charges against him. Like a lot of women in these types of toxic relationships, it would seem that she was trying her best to de-escalate the situation rather than confront it head-on. Steve later told his oldest daughter, Krista, from a previous marriage, that he was just upset because he found out that Crystal had numerous affairs while they had been married. As far as I can tell, that's bullshit. There's no corroboration that she had affairs. Her relationship with a new boyfriend didn't even begin until her divorce was final. It seems to me that Steve was somehow justifying his threatening behavior to his oldest daughter. And Steve wasn't even opposing the divorce. In fact, their divorce was finalized in June before she went missing in August. But close family members agreed that the marriage was never going to work. Steve's daughter Krista spoke on camera in a 48 Hours segment. She said Steve and Crystal were both toxic for each other, and that, quote, whenever they were together, there was never a happy ending. I'm not doubting her opinion, and I think she was very poised and honest. And by all accounts, she had a great relationship with her stepmother. However, it seems that Crystal and Steve were mismatched from the beginning. And Krista is a college student, savvy with social media. She spotted changes her father made pretty quickly. She noticed that right around the time Crystal filed for divorce, Steve changed his profile picture to a gravestone, and then to the Grim Reaper. And then he changed it back to a picture of him and Crystal, but not before his daughter had seen this. She said this all happened over a span of a couple of days. And he told Krista that he still loved Crystal, but, quote, I can't let her keep tearing me down like this. Krista said he was accepting of the divorce, hoping he would get his life in order. Remember, I told you, Steve wasn't great at keeping jobs or managing his finances. But Crystal's Aunt Cindy Saray said it wasn't true that Steve was so accepting. She said he actually had trouble letting go. And yet, oddly enough, the divorce was seen as amicable. Crystal helped Steve buy a home, and she was actually living in the master bedroom of that home while her townhouse was being renovated when she disappeared. She wanted to remain close to her children, of course, but frankly, she helped buy that house and probably felt entitled to stay there. And I don't blame her. I know she helped him for the sake of her children, but she was still more generous than most would be during a divorce. Steve, though mostly maintaining a civil relationship with his ex-wife, was not publicly admitting to the divorce. A deep dive on his Facebook account will show some very odd posts after the divorce would have been final, where he claims he brought her coffee in bed, rubbed her feet, etc. He loved to talk about his wife and how he loved to pamper her. And at least publicly, Crystal didn't seem to object to this. And she really did seem to want to maintain a healthy relationship. She had planned a family cruise with the children and Steve. But by early August, things had changed. Crystal had started seeing someone. And now I'm going to pause for a final word from our sponsors. Just 3 weeks before Crystal went missing, she had started seeing a local jeweler named Paul Hargrave. The two had instantly hit it off. Paul has a young daughter as well, and is a respected and well-liked businessman in Baytown. Paul is handsome, ambitious, and as adventurous towards life as Crystal was. A great father who is a health nut and loved to travel. Honestly, they had more in common than she and Steve ever did. In the weeks before she vanished, Crystal was brimming with joy. One of her final Facebook posts on August 23rd reads, "I've never been happier in my whole life than I am right now. God is so good." She was being careful, though. Her aunt, Cindy Serrate, spoke with 48 Hours also and said that Crystal had told her about the relationship, but stressed that Steve couldn't find out about it. Cindy said Crystal said, quote, "I have to keep this quiet or he'll kill me." But Paul says Steve did know about the relationship, because Crystal had recently decided she wanted him to come on the family cruise. Paul was hesitant because he felt it would be awkward with Steve there, and he finally just told Crystal he was uncomfortable going under those circumstances. At this, Crystal said she would uninvite Steve. She told Paul she planned to talk to Steve in the next few days. On August 25th, Hurricane Harvey was due to make landfall. Baytown ramped into high gear preparing for the storm. Crystal had spent the night at Paul's house the night before. His security cameras show her in his kitchen around 7 o'clock that morning, and then his outside cameras show her walking to her prized black Mercedes, chatting on her phone with her high heels in hand. She was going to get ready for work and pick up the kids from Steve. But according to Steve, she never showed up. She also never showed up at work and missed a closing that day. Her uncle, Jeff Walters, was immediately concerned. As I said, the two were extremely close. He raised her, and they worked together. He called the Chambers County Sheriff's Office and reported Crystal missing before noon on the 25th. It just wasn't like her. Crystal always showed up, and she always answered her phone, but no one could reach her. Strangely enough, for Sheriff Brian Hawthorne, this made Jeff Walters a suspect. The sheriff made his investigation open to the 48 Hours show crew. He complained on national television that Crystal's uncle Jeff was, quote, "extremely emotional and kept getting in way of the investigation." Excuse me? First of all, he's her family and he raised her. Of course he would be emotional. But beyond that, I'm not sure I like his insinuation. Crystal McDowell had recently been through a divorce. She had made a 911 call and reported threatening behavior on her ex-husband's part. But Sheriff Hawthorne was more interested in looking at her uncle, who he felt behaved oddly. I'm not sure it matters, but Jeff Walters is gay. The sheriff's list of suspects naturally included her new boyfriend Paul Hargrave and some other men who Crystal was friends with. But Jeff, Paul, and Steve were the top three suspects. And Jeff was number one for the sheriff for a while. Jeff Walters is an extremely successful realtor in Baytown. What exactly would be his motive if it isn't money or a sexual relationship? That is what I mean about the sheriff's insinuations. The problem was, Crystal's family became impatient. I think it's fair to point out she went missing in the hours before Harvey struck. And searching for a missing person in the middle of a natural disaster with historical flooding would be no easy feat. The sheriff's department and the DA made a big deal of it on that 48-hour segment. How, despite their own personal issues due to the storm, they worked around the clock on Crystal's case. Well, of course they did. Again, that is their job. Doctors, nurses, policemen, ambulance drivers, firemen, they are all public servants. They signed up for this. They are trained for this. It's literally the job. I find it insensitive to the family and boastful to the public how they kept congratulating themselves for doing their jobs. But I do appreciate that it was a difficult situation, and I cannot imagine carrying on with my own job during something like a hurricane. But I still don't like the backslapping shown on 48 hours. And I abhor the sheriff's attitude towards Crystal's family. You see, Jeff Walters hired a private investigator after a few days with no answers. It's more than obvious that this angered the sheriff, and even the DA, Cheryl Leak, made rather sarcastic remarks on television. She said, quote, "This is not a game to us. This is not a hobby. This is what we do. But you don't bring on some amateur super sleuth wannabe when you're in the middle of a missing persons investigation." Okay, Miss Leak, I can partially see your point, but disagree heartily with the amateur remark and the attitude in general. Private investigators are licensed professionals. Often, they are a worried family's only option when the police are getting nowhere or when they are refusing to investigate. I'm not saying that's what happened in Crystal's case. They were investigating. But it was in the middle of a hurricane, and I'm certain the family meant no harm. They just wanted to find Crystal. Evidently, the sheriff and the DA took major issue with the private investigator searching Crystal's townhouse. Their reasoning is that potential evidence could be lost or contaminated. But honestly, if a woman goes missing, don't you search her home first? I asked a friend of mine who is a district attorney, and he said he would get a warrant. And I think that's understandable, especially if foul play is suspected. But I feel like during a hurricane there would be extenuating circumstances. And she lived there alone. A warrant would not be necessary to protect the rights of her ex-husband or boyfriend. And furthermore, why didn't they just get the damn warrant? Again, you and they might say it was in the middle of a hurricane. Okay, sure. But the rain didn't begin in Baytown until almost midnight on Friday the 25th. Crystal was reported missing that morning. That's quite the window to obtain a warrant, in my opinion. And it was even a weekday. And by Saturday, the hurricane was downgraded from a 4 to a 1, and by Sunday, around noon, it had almost completely abated. Yes, they were still facing historical floods. Yes, the governor had declared a state of emergency. Yes to all of these things. But to my mind, a frantic family searching for their loved one should not be maligned on national television for doing everything they could to find her. By Tuesday, August 29th, the storm waters were receding and Crystal's black Mercedes was found at a Motel 6 near Interstate 10. It was spotted by a family friend, not the sheriff's deputies. The doors were unlocked, and the keys were sitting on the console. That alone is suspicious. No one leaves a luxury car unlocked at a motel, much less with the keys in it. It's patently obvious someone put Crystal's car in that lot before the storm, hoping it would be stolen. You know what Sheriff Hawthorne said on 48 Hours? Quote, "I will give the family credit for finding that vehicle." At best, he comes off as an insensitive asshole. At worst, he sounds spiteful towards the victim's family and obviously very defensive about his work on this case. And Jeff Walters and the rest of Crystal's family weren't his only target. He proceeded to hone in on Paul Hargrave, Crystal's boyfriend, despite the fact that Paul had an alibi and had turned over the security camera footage from his home in efforts to help in any way that he could. The sheriff later denied this and said that Paul turned over the footage to the media first. But Paul says he had the communication records to prove that he sent it to the sheriff's office first. When they didn't do anything about it, he released it to the media. Sheriff Hawthorne said, "Paul is just soaking up the attention." Really? Even if that's true, it doesn't mean he killed her. And again, it's an asshole thing to say on national television. By the way, Paul personally offered a $5,000 reward for information leading to Crystal's whereabouts. Her uncle, Jeff Walters, put up a $10,000 reward. And yet, detectives still were not really focused on Steve McDowell. Even though Crystal's car was found on August 29th, the official search for her did not begin in earnest until September 2nd, 5 days later. Granted, they were supposedly investigating. They gave the television show 48 hours, quote, unprecedented access to the investigation from the inside. I'm sorry, but how is that helping? We get to see detectives openly speculating about Crystal's uncle, Paul, and of course, and finally, Stephen McDowell. Both the sheriff and the district attorney agree that finding Crystal's car was the turning point. And remember, Sheriff Hawthorne does credit the family for that. After the car was found, they started searching security footage from the motel and other businesses close by. They finally caught their break from the security footage from a nearby Walmart that showed a man on a bicycle going down a service road for Interstate 10. The detectives felt that the man in the video looked like Steve McDowell, but said they didn't have enough evidence. At that point, Crystal had been missing almost 2 weeks. Sheriff Hawthorne says his department and the DA's office were getting really worried. Quote, "The stakes were only getting higher. He still had the children." Right. Steve McDowell did still have the children. In my opinion, he should have been a suspect from day one. Steve had willingly come in for interviews, but despite their recent divorce and Crystal's 911 call, he was not the main suspect until the Walmart footage was found. I don't understand this at all. It's trite to say it, but we all know it. It's almost always the husband. Even District Attorney Cheryl Leake admitted that when she found out Crystal was going to tell Steve he was uninvited from the cruise, she considered that to be a trigger. But they still didn't sweat him. Not until they had the footage, and by then, they had also proven that he had bought the bicycle from Walmart. So they bring Steve back in for questioning. DA Cheryl Leake said she could tell he was falling apart. He wasn't sleeping, his face had sunken in. But Sheriff Hawthorne said he was concerned that putting too much pressure on Steve was dangerous because he still had the kids. Okay, sure. But he did not have them while he was at the station being questioned, and they let him go again. By Friday, September 8th, Crystal had been missing for 15 days. District Attorney Leake had finally gotten in touch with Family and Protective Services and was ready for him this time. She convinced the agency to remove the children from Steve's home and place them with Crystal's Aunt Cindy. But this seems more like a strategic move on her part rather than a cautious one. She said, quote, "We knew psychologically that this would be the final straw for him, his kids being gone." When Steve found out the children had been removed, he visibly looked relieved from the footage in the interrogation room. And yet, he kept stalling. And they let him. He promised he would return the next morning and would tell them everything. And they let him walk out of there and go home. I'm not the only one flabbergasted at this decision. Even the 48 Hours correspondent, Maureen Maher, was incredulous. She said, quote, "I've been a crime reporter for 25 years. I have never heard of a department saying, 'Go home and get your affairs in order.' Really? They let him go?" DA Cheryl Leake defensively answered, "Well, we had the kids." She said they still didn't have enough evidence and they needed a confession. Okay, so then why did you let him walk out of there? He could have killed himself. He could have run. And then Crystal would never be found. But they rolled the dice anyway. Steve McDowell went home and called his oldest daughter, Krista. He told her to come home immediately because he needed her. So Krista jumped in her car at 3:30 in the morning and drove 2 hours to see her father. When she got there, he told her that investigators told him if he showed them where the body was, they would lessen his punishment. Krista then asked her father if he knew where Crystal's body was, and he started crying. At that point, she said she knew and that she was certain. She said she begged him to tell her what he did, but he said he just couldn't tell her. By 6 a.m., there was a knock at the door. The sheriff's deputies were there to escort Steve back to the station for his confession. The time had finally come. They laid out all the evidence for him, but now he was waffling. He said that wasn't him on the security footage. He acted evasive. And then he finally told investigators he would tell them everything if they would let him see his kids again. Now Cheryl Leak had finally had enough of Steve McDowell's shit. She told the investigators to say no and to tell him if he took them to the body right then, he could see his kids. Stephen McDowell immediately broke down and told the truth. Sheriff Hawthorne said he told investigators he came up behind Crystal and strangled her. He then put her body in the trunk of her car as their children were sleeping upstairs. In the pre-dawn hours the next morning, he went and disposed of her body in a densely wooded area off of an access road near his home. The Texas Rangers, the Sheriff's Department, and a search and rescue organization called Texas EquiSearch had already been looking for her body. Steve McDowell took them right to it. Sheriff Hawthorne later publicly said that what they found of Crystal weighed less than 35 pounds. Wild animals and the elements had gotten to her. 44-year-old Stephen McDowell was indicted for first-degree murder and failed to make a $500,000 bond. His trial is set for next month on November 26th. We will see then exactly what plea he enters given his confession. But good old Sheriff Hawthorne has already stated publicly that he thinks this was a crime of passion. Quote, "Personally, I think he snapped. There's no doubt in my mind that he loved this woman. So what? And for once, the district attorney agreed with me. She remarked on camera, quote, "Cry me a river." Except it isn't that simple. In Texas, they have what is called sudden passion on the books. It's not a defense to murder and cannot be raised at trial until a jury has found the defendant guilty of murder. It's used during the punishment phase as mitigating circumstances. If the jury decides they believe the defendant acted in sudden passion, the murder charge is reduced from a first-degree felony to a second-degree felony. The difference is quite significant. Not only does Texas still have the death penalty for first-degree felony murder, but it would also carry a sentence from 5 to 99 years in state prison. But a second-degree conviction would be anywhere from 2 to 20 years in prison. Let me repeat that. Stephen McDowell could serve as little as 2 years in prison for strangling his ex-wife to death as his children slept, hiding her body, and lying to police for over 2 weeks. I don't know about you, but I'm not okay with that. So let's look at the law. The Texas Penal Code 19.02A2 defines sudden passion as passion directly caused by and arising out of provocation by the individual killed or another acting with a person killed, which passion arises at the time of the offense and is not solely the result of former provocation. Further, Texas Penal Code 19.02D explains that the actions that caused the murder must have arisen while the defendant was under the immediate influence of sudden passion arising from an adequate cause. I suppose a good defense attorney will make that argument. We know that Crystal was planning on uninviting Steve from the family cruise, and she was also going to cut him off financially. Steve really was about to lose it all. But not only do I not buy it, I believe it's unconscionable that Sheriff Brian Hawthorne put his opinion out there that this was a crime of passion. Has he ever even heard of tainting a jury pool? And I'm not the only one that feels that way. Crystal's family and her boyfriend Paul were outraged by the 48 Hours segment. Specifically at the sheriff. They think he blamed the hurricane for a shoddy investigation. I don't necessarily disagree with them. and he and the district attorney were so pissed at her family that they called for a grand jury inquiry to see if their actions had hurt the investigation. The sheriff said that was because of the private investigator the family hired. But he said, though some of the family were subpoenaed to answer questions, no one was indicted. Of course they weren't. The grand jury was not so blinded by their own hubris to go after a grieving family. And frankly, the good sheriff thinks that Paul Hargrave was seeking attention. But did Paul Hargrave invite a national television program inside an active investigation? Mr. Hargrave is a private citizen with every right to give interviews as he sees fit. He and Crystal's uncle, Jeff Walters, were her only advocates, and they were always respectful and passionate in their search for Crystal. The attention whore, in my mind, is Sheriff Brian Hawthorne. But that is all up for a jury to decide, and I am not unwilling to say that the hurricane did not hamper the investigation. No, not at all. I just don't like the behavior of the sheriff or the DA for the cameras. They should have saved it for the courtroom. And I don't really believe this was a crime of passion. We do know that abusive husbands often kill their wives when they make a definitive move away from the relationship. The first 3 months after a woman leaves are the most dangerous. Crystal McDowell went missing 3 months after her divorce was final and just days after she told her ex-husband about her new boyfriend. But for a crime of passion, he was certainly organized enough to cover it up fairly successfully. And again, I'm not the only one who thinks this way. Paul Hargrave thinks it was premeditated, and even heartbreakingly blames himself. Quote, I believe he knew exactly what he was doing. I think he knew the storm was coming in, and this would help cover his tracks. I think I had a lot to do with his decision to do this, and I can't help but feel responsible for that. No, Mr. Hargrave, you are not to blame. You never were. Stephen McDowell is a sadly typical jealous ex-husband who felt that if he couldn't have Crystal, then no one could. And I agree that he knew the storm was coming and could have planned this. But that isn't for me to decide. Again, it's up to the jury. And I damn sure hope they can see through all of this mess. See through a self-serving sheriff who is out to make excuses and repeatedly talking about how cooperative Stephen McDowell was. No, he wasn't. He confessed more than 2 weeks later, after he was caught on security footage and his children were taken away. No amount of blaming the hurricane will change the fact that the police failed to get a warrant and begin the investigation in earnest before the storm started. In fact, I believe that the hurricane actually helped catch Steve McDowell. If the floodwaters had not hidden Crystal's car, it might have been stolen and never found. And then they would not have found the security footage. Maybe they would have eventually gotten a confession from McDowell, but I doubt it. As I said in the opening, into each life some rain must fall. In this case, I think the rain will bring justice for Crystal, and I hope finding her body gave some measure of peace for her family as they were able to lay her to rest. As her beloved Uncle Jeff Walters wrote, "She is a light in the heavens that can never be extinguished. She is an angel that watches over all of us with that bright smile." Southern Fried True Crime is written and produced by me, Erica Kelly. The original graphic art is by Coley Horner, and Southern Fried's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio. Special thanks to the Weather Channel for partnering with me on this episode. Please don't forget to tune in to their debut episode of Storm of Suspicion on October 7th at 8 Eastern or 7 Central. Also, don't forget to check out the podcast from Texas I previewed for you. Gone Cold Podcast is an investigative, long-form series. And All Crime, No Cattle is a more discussion-type format, with Aaron and Shay diving deep and breaking down historical and lesser-known cases. I know y'all love a Southern accent as much as you do a Southern story, so please do give them a try. If you enjoyed today's show, please tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. You can also listen directly from Spreaker, my network online, and I'm also on Stitcher, Overcast, and many other podcatchers. If you're interested in supporting the show, I have a Patreon page with many different rewards for different levels of donation. Or you could visit my website, southernfriedtruecrime.com, where you can make a one-time donation just by hitting the donate button. I also have a merchandise store open. Just go to whatamaneuver.net and click on Shop by Store, then search for Southern Fried True Crime. If you have any comments, corrections, or suggestions, you can email me at southernfriedtruecrime@gmail.com. I'm also all over social media. Just search the show name in your favorite platform if you'd like to connect with me there. I would love to hear your thoughts. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Y'all take care.